If you believe what they tell us, you'd believe in ages and stages. And as you enter the golden years, your life is all but over. In this new podcast, we aim to dispel the fusty myths and apparent prerequisites of old age. You can hear the inverted commas. We set out to prove that age is not just a number, but more importantly, a state of mind. We walk you gently through the joy and despair of coming to terms with the golden years while upgrading ourselves to what we like to call the platinum years. With a host of guests from all walks of life, we discuss their philosophy on aging well. We aim to bring you a manifesto for living a longer, healthier, happier life, and what reaching old age signifies to each of our guests. One thing is for sure. There's never been a better time to embrace old age. We have the time, experience, knowledge, infinite wisdom, well, we hope you do, and more importantly, the cash, or so the millennials will have us believe, to live life to the fullest. So say no to age discrimination, and yes to a long and happy life. Hello there. Well, I'm back after a summer break, not that I actually went anywhere. So let me reintroduce myself. I'm Nigel Osner, performer, occasional actor, writer, and lyricist. My most recent show was also called Too Young to Stay In, Too Old to Go Out, and this podcast accompanies it. Once again, I'm recording in what I like to call my home studio. Now, let me introduce you to my guest, who is safely ensconced in her home in the country, which to me is anywhere north of the North Circular, or, well, south of the River Thames, really. I'm absolutely delighted to be talking with Dilly Keen, songwriter, singer, actress, and cabaret artiste, perhaps best known as one third of the satirical cabaret trio, Fascinating Aida, of which she is the founding member some 36 years ago. To date, Fascinating Aida has had 23 million YouTube hits. On her website, she states that she'll do a lot of things for payment, not this, I have to say, and has regularly written for a number of well-known publications over, in her words, her long, long, long life. Dilly, thanks so much for talking on this podcast today.
My pleasure.
Hi. So let's begin by me asking you, what does the title of it, Too Young to Stay In, Too Old to Go Out, mean to you, if anything?
Well, I have, in spite of my very long, 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 long life, I'm 68, I still don't know what it means because I've got no judgment at all about that sort of thing. I'll still stay out far too late and I'll party hard. I pay for it now in a way that I never used to. I could bounce out of bed at 7:45, no problem, 6 o'clock, no more. Now I can't. I'm wrecked the next day. That's the difference it's meant. But I'm still too young to stay in.
Good.
Except we're forced to bed. And the too old to go out bit does not apply.
Right. Now, I know what you mean. I used to manage three nights in a row, but one now, if I can.
Oh, yes, it's one now, yeah. But then, you know, it's COVID, so, I mean, nobody notices if you don't go out two nights in a row.
That's right. So cabaret, what does cabaret mean to you? Because it means different things to different people. And why do you love it?
I love it because it's a way of speaking directly to the audience. And you can create stories and different, almost like different characters, not quite different characters, but different facets of your own character. And you can go from tragedy to comedy in one easy bound.
In the same song, in the same verse even.
Yes, indeed, in the same verse, but, you know, or just in two different songs. You can leap all over the sort of the emotional canvas. My friend Kit Hesketh-Harvey, who is my rival in song and my dear, dear friend, described it as it's songs that don't have a fourth wall.
Can you see? I mean, if I perform, I actually quite like looking at the audience, although, of course, they've got to be near enough to you. Do you like being near enough to an audience if you can actually see them?
I used not to, but I love it now, yes.
Right. Do you actually
ever,
right? Do you talk to them specifically? Anybody in, or just address them sort of generally?
No, I address them generally.
You don't single anyone out.
No, unless John is in the show, in the audience, my partner, and then
right.
I might have to say, "Darling, you're talking, and I'm giving my all."
Right.
That man over there, ladies and gentlemen, is the man I live with, and he is talking through my song.
Cheeky.
No, he's ordering more wine. Inevitably.
Right. So, pluses and minuses of getting older as a performer, and maybe for you in particular.
What? Say that question again.
Well, plus, as we get, you know, getting older as a performer, there are sort of pluses and minuses.
I think the pluses. Cabaret,
there are a lot of pluses, actually, but I was wondering what you think.
Yes, there are definitely pluses of getting older. You develop a rapport with your audience. They come sort of trained and knowing to a certain extent what to expect. There's a sort of friendship with them. And I know they're not the same every night, but it's not that feeling of going out there thinking, oh, who are they? I kind of know who they are. I kind of know who they're going to be, particularly for my solo stuff.
Right.
Because obviously that's a great deal smaller, the audience. The audiences with fascinating eyes are big, and I'm not quite sure who are they. There are an awful lot of teachers, a lot of educationalists, as far as we've discovered. That's sort of the major profession. Teachers and lawyers. Lawyers love us. I once went to have lunch at the Old Bailey. I was invited as a guest to have lunch with the judges, and one of the judges came to see the show, and came up to us afterwards, because we've always gone out to sign and press the flesh and say hello to people, and he said, "You would recognise me without my wig, but you had lunch with us at the Old Bailey. Very, very good show, but I do hope I don't see you in the court there. That lyric about X, Y, Z, we might just be the wrong side of the law."
Really?
Yes.
I said, I know,
sir, but I'll make the court laugh.
Yes. I once had lunch at the Old Bailey, I think. So I'm actually, my background, although it's a long time ago, I'm a barrister. I think I must have gone in with my pupil master. I was completely scared at the time.
You're a barrister?
Yeah.
Cool.
I haven't practiced for ages, but I still am, actually. Unlike being a solicitor, you don't seem to have to pay to remain one. Let's just hope the bar council doesn't hear this and change its mind all about me.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting.
Obviously the material in your own shows is different to the shows you do with Fascinating Aida, but is there a kind of a different feel to your own performing?
Is there a different feel?
Different emphasis,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, there is. I tell you what, I describe it thus. I say Fascinating Aida does the satirical and political, and I do the personal. That's sort of how it's divided up. However, COVID has forced a couple of songs out of me, which are political. I wrote a song for Dominic Cummings, and I wrote a song for Gavin Williamson. So I'm doing some gigs at the end of the year at the Crazy Cocks, right. And I'll probably include those. So, if there is a division, it's sort of stupid to do the same material, really, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, pointless, because it's going to be richer and broader with Fascinating Aida. And to just, you know, sort of narrow it down to one voice is rather dull. So that's why I do different material. And so it's the more personal stuff. And we used to do quite personal stuff in Fascinating Aida, and I think it's better without. I think it's special. Yeah,
I mean, I think in cabaret, well, I suppose perhaps even in actors as well, the longer you go, particularly perhaps in cabaret, you just learn more, you've done more, life has taxed you more, you just can bring more to it.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And it doesn't matter what age you are, you can play, I play my 36-year-old self. I haven't been 36 in a very long time.
I think I have a friend who's been 42 now for about 18 years. He announces this every birthday. What's your approach to amusing an audience?
Oh, golly. That's a really difficult question.
Right.
I was always able to make people laugh, as a kid.
It's just something which comes naturally.
Yes, it was just. I think it's the classic defense of the class clown. You know,
right.
I was the class clown. I was goofy. I felt lanky and I had buck teeth and I felt very unattractive. So I made people laugh.
And what keeps you, you're still writing, still performing, still, what keeps you going? Do you think you're more angry?
Oh, yes. I'm furious.
Yeah.
She said, laughing. I am. I'm furious at the way the world is going. I am, that's, I think, what is a great, it's great for keeping you going. If I was satisfied, I wouldn't be writing, would I suppose, and that's what makes me think, oh well, let's write a song about this or that. Let's write a song about, we wrote a song called Fake News. It was Adele dreamt that one up, in fairness. Yeah. But it was wonderful fun to write it. It's been recorded, it hasn't been released yet, but we did it in the last show. But it's awesome. I'm very proud of that. And you can hear that's very funny, but of course it's fueled by fury. And the great thing about fury is you have to, that turning it into comedy is great because it means that people don't see your fury.
Well, it channels it, I suppose, makes it coherent as well.
Yeah.
What upsets you particularly about the way the world's going?
Well, it's drifting right wing, isn't it? Very right wing. It's we're in very, very dangerous territory. Asking neighbours to spy on one another, to report, if they've got 7 people in the house next door. What are we going to have? Block wardens?
Yes.
I write to my MP now and I annoy her a lot. I've become... I'm the more left wing version of Colonel Bufton Tufton of Tunbridge Wells. I am enraged of North Oxfordshire.
Right.
And I realise it's a ridiculous position to be in, but there we are. Somebody has to do it.
Well, the surprise is me, and maybe I was a bit kind of naive to think that. I might have thought back in the late, around about 1990, when the Soviet Union collapsed and so on and so on, we might be heading for a slightly better world. We seem to be in a much worse world.
There really was a hope, wasn't there? There really was hope. The collapse of the Berlin Wall, perestroika, glasnost, there was so much that was exploitable as being good. And it's all evaporated. It's gone with the wind.
I know. It's just horrifying when it's such a civilized world now.
And people have disappeared into smaller and smaller groups so that, they're losing sight of what the big picture is. And the big picture, of course, is the climate emergency.
Oh, yes.
I think COVID's a sideshow. I think Brexit is a sideshow. Trump isn't a sideshow. He's part of the problem.
I mean, I've just sort of wondered in a way whether COVID is the world striking back at us.
Oh, yes. I think it's Gaia.
Gaia, yes. I agree.
Trying to get rid of us, yeah. I'm a big fan of Lovelock, you know, the scientist, the guy of theory. I think it made complete sense to me when I wrote it. And I think he's right. I don't think the human race will die out. I think it's that there are enough very ingenious people who will survive. But I agree. I think he's right. We'll be pushed to the edges. And that's where we belong.
I was writing a fantasy, which I got stuck with for years. And I picked it up again. You know, that was what I've been doing a lot during this period.
Really?
I finally managed to finish it. Yeah, well, yes, I wrote a fantasy novel years ago, which I always quite believed in, published it. But I want to get probably published. And I started a sequel, not that anybody had wanted the first, and got stuck. But one of my characters in it had been Gaia. And so thought, well, no, really, let me make use of this. And so I've made her literally, because she's trying to protect herself in the world.
Yeah.
Send around this pandemic, way pandemic. So I was going to ask you what occupies your mind at the moment, but I think you've really been saying this, and you've really been expressing this in your blog, haven't you?
Yes. I was a climate catastrophist 40 years ago.
Really?
When it was unfashionable, it was me and Prince Charles,
and a few
others.
Yes.
And my brother, funnily enough, said to me quite recently, a couple of years ago, he said, "God, you were such a bore banging on about the planet, and that's really annoying. But you were right."
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I started a blog about 18 months ago. It's quite hard work, so I don't publish as much as I should. But it's called Shit You Don't Need. And I called it Shit You Don't Need because instead of Stuff You Don't Need, because I thought stuff didn't really say it. We've all got stuff we don't need that we're fond of, we like, whether it's that sort of vase that we inherited from Aunt Maud, or whether it's the, those cushions that we made and don't go, don't go with anything. They're still in a cupboard or something. And we're fond of that and we don't want to get rid of it. So that's stuff you don't need. And that's fine. It's the shit you don't need that we're persuaded into buying because clever advertising and brilliant marketing have persuaded us that we need it. And we've got into the habit of not examining what we buy and to always sort of take what seems to be an easy option, and it isn't necessarily. I've just written a thing about tea bags, for instance. And,
I read that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, the follow up, which is more about tea bags. Basically, it was a lot of people wrote back to me and said, "Oh, but I use plastic free tea bags." And the thing is, an awful lot of tea bags. All tea bags contain plastic. Now, whether it's petroleum based plastic or bioplastic is immaterial. It's plastic. However, because of the legislation, people who use bioplastics are entitled to describe their tea bags as plastic-free. Now, they might be made entirely of cornstarch-based plastic, petroleum. Now, the problem with that is, number one, you're growing cornstarch where you could grow crops that feed people. Starvation is still a huge problem in the world. Number two, you're diverting the produce of those fields. Number two is bioplastics come in three types, basically. They're compostable, which means that you can chuck them in your compost heap and they will break down, and that's great. Biodegradable, which is – oh, sorry, that's my dog. She's a nice little bugger. Biodegradable means it won't degrade in your in your compost heap. It needs to go to a high quality facility with the intense heat of an industrial biodegrading facility. And then there are non-biodegradable plastics, which are made from cornstarch. They'll never degrade. They'll always be plastic. So for the life of me, I can't really see an awful lot of difference. So all the tea bags are made with the middle grade, which is biodegradable. Now, if you aren't absolutely sure that you are sending your old tea bags off, and your council is actually going to give them to the high, put them in the high quality facility, then you really shouldn't use them, because they're just going to sit in landfill, or they'll be sent to Sri Lanka or something, you know, I mean, it's terrible. And plastic is plastic forever, unless it's genuinely a given time to degrade. So all these people who wrote to me and said, but my tea is plastic free. There's only one tea bag company I have come across, which is Yogi Teas, which has the honesty to say there is no such thing, unfortunately, at the moment, as a tea bag which doesn't use a plastic as a sealant. So, you know, why don't people go back to real tea, loose tea, which is much nicer and much better quality?
It's just making a tea in a cup, isn't it? That makes it. Yeah, I didn't know that. My council given up. It used to collect stuff for recycling, and then it just kind of gave. They do recycling, but they gave us a bin to put things in, you know, which were going to be composted, and they kind of gave it up because it was just too difficult for some reason. Well,
yeah, well, tea is real tea for you, leaf tea for you, and I mean, take. Loo paper as well. I mean, loo paper. Everybody loves this sort of really soft, luxurious Cushelle or whatever. Mm. You know, impregnated with aloe vera. To give your bottom the luxury experience it deserves. Well, the problem with that is that to make the softest loo paper in the world, you have to cut down the oldest virgin hardwood trees. So if you are using soft, soft, soft Cushelle, you're actually wiping your bottom with the home of the grey wolf. So, you know, we don't know enough. And we don't, it's quite hard researching all this stuff. And so,
I mean, I actually, you know, so going back just momentarily on loo paper, I actually make a point of using recycled loo paper. Is that good or bad or better?
It's better. It's better, but the best stuff at the moment is bamboo. There's a company called Who Gives a Crap. It does come from China, I believe, but the rolls are incredibly tightly rolled, so it lasts for ages. Whereas all those little things, they last the commercial things you get in the supermarket, they don't last at all. They last a day or two or three days with a couple of people in the house. And the bamboo stuff lasts forever. We bought 10 boxes a year and a half ago, and we've still got two to go, and we gave three away.
Right. Well, I've noted that down. Seriously.
170. But the best thing we could all do, in fact, is get little bidets. So that's the kind of thing I write about. But I'll give you the science. And because I'm not a scientist, I have to read all these scientific papers. And that's why it takes so long, because I don't read and understand easily, because there'll be difficult words and I'll have to look them up. And I'll go, okay. So I have to, it takes me about a week of full 7 days work to write each article. So it's exhausting.
Yes.
But it's quite interesting. And if I could make a difference, that would be the best thing. If I can persuade people that, you know, through humour, that they could change their ways without affecting their lives materially. And just say, do you really need to use this? If you use this instead, you're doing much less damage. Or if you give it up, will you really miss it?
Overall, just thinking about you as a creative person, do you think you're still as creative? I mean, some people do get less creative as they get older. Some people, I suppose, get more, just differently.
Yes, I'm the Tolstoy of song. I'll go on driving people crackers until I'm very, very old. And I'll end up escaping to a station in Barnstable Station.
And well, chased by your partner.
Chased by my poor partner. Yeah, exactly. Yes. that is such hubris. Please take it as it's not meant at all. I'd like to go on creating until I drop. Yes, I've got tons of energy. Although I do notice I'm slowing down a little bit.
Well, okay. Yes, well, that does happen, sadly. What about once we're free again, or what are you looking forward to doing most, if we're ever free again?
Do you know, I'm such a creature of reality. I don't know, really. Going to the theatre. I'm going to go to the theatre every night. That's what I'll do. And matinees.
Matinees, yes.
Everything. I'll do 8 shows a week.
Right.
That's what I miss. I'm withering without seeing stuff. And no, I'm sorry. Seeing somebody doing you know, the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy from their front room, it just doesn't work for me. I watched a little bit of, you know, the home videos online of people I love, but only a little bit because I want to see them live, because I'm an addict of live theatre. So that's what I'll do. But mostly I'm quite realistic. I remember years ago somebody saying to me, when I was one of my very first interviews, a journalist said to me, so what's your ambition? And I said, it's to own a washing machine.
Right.
And he said, no, seriously, surely it's to play the Albert Hall. And I went, no, that's impossible. No, my ambition is to have a washing machine. No, he said, no, it can't be. I said, it is, because it's achievable. So I would say I've always tailored my expectations. I've got a very firm grip, I think, on what's possible. So I don't want to imagine too much about what's going to happen, what I'll be able to do after COVID, because it might be so different.
I don't think theatre is going to die, but it's certainly going to be, individual theatres and venues are going to have suffered, aren't they? May not come back.
Yeah. It's going to change. There'll be terrible changes and there'll be terrible losses, I think, really terrible. And it's a scandal that in the country that's so proud of its theatrical traditions from, you know, Shakespeare to James Graham, what a Purcell to Lloyd Webber. It's disgraceful that it's not being supported by the government. Disgraceful. We're a bunch of thugs.
Where can people read a bit more about you and your interests and ultimately find out where you're going to be performing again? You did mention the Crazy Cocks earlier.
Oh, yes, yes. I suppose I've got a website, but I'm not very good at keeping it up because it's run by somebody else, and I think probably I'd be better if I was running it myself because I'm interested in that sort of thing. However, you have reminded me I must put it up there. I will be updating my website as soon as I end this conversation. Yes, I'm doing Crazy Cocks, and I'm doing a gig at Altrincham at the end of November. And on the 4th of November, I'm very nervous and also excited because I'm giving a keynote speech. London South Bank University are holding a series of events on climate and sustainability, and the next 2-day event is beginning on the 4th of November, and I'm the opening speaker.
Right, that's very exciting. That will be presumably online?
It will be online, yes. It will definitely be online. So that's me, that's what I'll be doing. So that's, I will spend, I think, probably the next month writing my speech, because it's scary biscuits. I'll have to make sense.
Oh, that doesn't always bother many people. Everybody making speeches, of course. and finally, what would your present self tell your younger self?
It'll all be all right. You're on the right course. That's what I tell myself. Because it depends on what age you think my younger self is. What age is this mythical younger self?
Late teens, early 20s.
Oh, okay. It'll all come right. You will get to drama school. You will have a career in the theatre. Don't worry. I was thwarted by parental ambitions for me to be something that I would never have been, which was to be a secretary and to be married to a stockbroker and have four nice children in Godalming, and then to sort of keel over and die, having been a pillar of the community. And I have just, I'm much too much of a kind of ditzy old rebel, really. And I didn't really do what I wanted to do until I was 23, when I went to drama school. And then my life began. And I've had a wonderful life.
Thank you again. And I know people will be really looking forward to seeing you perform just as soon as you can. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Too Young to Stay In, Too Old to Go Out. The beauty of podcasts is that you can decide to listen while staying in or going out. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please remember to spread the word. Keep up to date with future podcasts and events by subscribing and adding alerts to whichever platform you are listening on. I'd love to hear your thoughts and suggestions on future topics or guests, so do get in touch.